College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, I will be joined by Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, I want you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, send me your questions on Twitter. I will get to them later in the show. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is brought to you by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. And Cincinnati was one of the schools I visited last week on the road. I saw several programs practice as we got going in the preseason for the 17-18 season. First thought is going to be from Kentucky. I was there last Tuesday. Now, Kentucky to me is the all-airport team because there is only one player in the Wildcats rotation, freshman point guard Quade Green, that stands less than 6'5". Now, the difference in this Kentucky team versus the last two that John Calipari has had, I don't see anybody yet in Kentucky's rotation on the perimeter, in the backcourt, that can do what Jamal Murray and Malik Monk did in terms of going over the defense with their shooting ability. Kevin Knox, obviously, was the best shooter that I saw in practice, the talented five-star freshman, but it remains to be seen how good Knox is going to be off the dribble as a freshman. Early on, Kentucky's best offense may be a missed shot just because of the physical overwhelming talent that the Wildcats have. Also, I have to admit, I was really impressed with Xavier. Xavier doesn't have the same makeup as it did 2 years ago. The elements of the roster are a little bit different when the Musketeers got a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament and lost in the round of 32 to Wisconsin. But Xavier, to me, looks like a top 15 team, looks like a team that has a chance to be, again, a 2 or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. Trayvon Blewett and JP McCure are two of the top 10 best players in the Big East. I also was really impressed with the two freshmen for Xavier, Paul Scruggs and Najee Marshall. Najee Marshall will be the guy for Xavier that allows the Musketeers to go small, and then Trayvon Blewett will slide to power forward. I don't think he'll start. I think he'll see Kaiser Gates and also, obviously, either Sean O'Mara or Tyreek Jones start up front, but I think when Chris Mack makes the early substitution to bring Najee Marshall in the game, you will see Xavier play with only one big, and Blewett will be your power forward, which to me is his best college position and a position where he can really do damage. Two physical observations from Xavier. Blewett's in the best shape of his life. Looks unbelievably slim. Chris Mack told me he's under 200 pounds. Came to Xavier about 225. And JP McCure has added 10 to 12 pounds of muscle. This, to me, is the dark horse team to win the Big East. Now, people can say, well, how can you say that with the way Villanova's dominated the conference? Now, Villanova has won 71 games since realignment a couple of years ago in this new rendition of the Big East. 51 have been by double figures. But Villanova will not play Xavier this year at the Pavilion on campus. In the 4 games that Villanova has played Xavier over the last 4 years at the Pavilion on campus, Villanova has won by an average of 23 points per game. With that out of the equation, now I think Xavier has a chance, just like Seton Hall, to push Villanova at the top of the Big East standings. And I also took in Louisville last week when I wrapped up my Midwestern tour, and you know, it's just a very surreal feeling around the Cardinals program. There's only one coach right now on the floor, and David Paget. Obviously, there are still strong signs of Rick Pitino in the practice facility. There's pictures up of him. There's monuments up of him. But I think the one thing that, with all that's transpired, that everybody seems to be forgetting is that Louisville, if they can just get to the court, has a top 15 team. Louisville, if it can just get to the court, has a team that will be one of the top three or four in the ACC. On the court, what did I see? VJ King is set for a breakout sophomore season, and the best long-term prospect in Louisville's program may very well be 6'11 freshman Malik Williams. He can shoot, he can rebound, he can handle, he can pass. A gifted, gifted prospect from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Remember the name, Malik Williams. Now, I also saw Cincinnati practice last week. The Bearcats, I have ranked ninth in my preseason top 25, and the face of the Bearcats program, Mick Cronin, joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. Cincinnati has advanced to seven consecutive NCAA tournaments under Mick Cronin, and the Bearcats have their eyes set on an eighth appearance in the field of 68 and more, and the aforementioned head coach joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And Mick, returning talent has always usurped incoming talent in college basketball. Is this the most returning talent that you've ever had as the head coach of Cincinnati?
They pay you to answer that question, John. I'm not an analyst. I'm just a ball coach. So, you know, I'm not a bit, and I don't, you know, I don't make statements of that nature. It's just not who I am. What I will tell you, though, is I love my team, and my seniors are great kids, and Gary Clark and Kyle Washington, as you know. Gary Clark is a problem for a lot of people, as you like to say. But leadership, I believe in. I really do believe in it, and I think you got to have culture in your locker room. And coaches, you can talk about those things all you want, but if you don't have players – that are mature enough to understand how to operate, how your team needs to operate on and off the floor, behind the scenes, in the locker room, when they're away from the floor, I don't think you have a chance to have a great year, to have a great team. So I think it's, you know, my optimism would begin with our leadership of our team and then our talent level. You know, I think, you know, when we had Sean Kilpatrick, probably didn't have a lot of offensive firepower around him. We've been awfully balanced here for the last 3 years. But I would say that you got Jacob Evans, but on the other side, you got Jaron Cumberland. Quite confident in Keith Williams and Trevor Moore being able to score the ball when they come in behind them. You know, I think we got two point guards that are going to really play well and have great years. So just optimistic we got more than one guy that can score the ball, and we got some maturity on our team that tends to lend yourself to – that's why you win. It's not all just run up and down. You know, these games get real. Strategy is real. And intangibles separate teams. So I think when you have a lot of maturity in your personnel, you tend to have – the intangibles, you know, and I think, you know, the Golden State Warriors are a great example. You look at their talent is awesome, but their intellect is just as impressive. Therefore, they do intangible things that lend itself to winning. And it could just be simply switching screens verbally and not giving up baskets at game time. So that's my answer to my excitement level. But as far as comparing our teams, that's what they pay you the big money for, my friend.
You know, Mick, there's been a narrative out there surrounding Cincinnati basketball that Cincinnati is an underdog program, and it's a program that kind of begins the season unnoticed and then becomes relevant by December or January. That's not the case this year. People expect Cincinnati to be one of the better teams in college basketball. What is it like for you to manage a dynamic that really, for your first 7 years, wasn't always the case?
Well, you know, again, that's what they pay me for. So you got to handle it. I think it's a good thing if it's legitimate. You know, and, you know, that remains to be seen. Obviously, we have to replace Troy Copain, who had the basketball at winning time for the last 3 years or around here. But we won 30 games last year. And you got your three leading scorers back in Jacob Evans, Kyle Washington, and Gary Clark. So when you have that and you get the freshman of the year, the sixth man of the year, whatever Jaron Cumbone was in our league, you're going to have high expectations. So it's good. I mean, it's good for our players. You know, I'm secure with the program and where I'm at as a coach and our staff. We don't like really think or worry about stuff like that. I think any attention that your program gets, it's good for your personnel because I think what gets lost in the shuffle and all this stuff, and you talk about programs and colleges and coaches, it's we're all here for the players. And so when if your players can get the light shone upon them, then they have a chance to perform and chase their dreams. So it's, you know, I welcome that stuff. I think because I think it's good for the kids. You know, it sure it puts more pressure on you as a coach, but you know, I'm kind of oblivious to anything external anyway, which I think you have to be in our profession.
You know, Mick, your team did win 30 games last year and a game in the NCAA tournament, and you lost to a UCLA team that had multiple pros and advanced to the Sweet 16 and was a very competitive game for a half. How much did that game reinforce how well you have to be equipped offensively to get back to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament like you did in 2012?
Oh, I thought we missed a lot of open shots in the second half, John. And to be fair, I think, you know, the problem was when they got hot, we couldn't match them. And defensively is where the rebounding, our staples where people probably, you know, there were some people that picked us in that game. Obviously, it was a pick'em game, very close game. But we weren't as good defensively. I think we didn't live up to our billing as who we are as a program, defense and rebounding in that game. I would say that's really was my disappointment in that loss in the NCAA tournament, because you're going to have games where the ball doesn't go in. Now, obviously, they were one of the best offensive teams I've ever had to prepare for. You know, and obviously, you know, come out after the fact that Lonzo Ball's mother had a stroke. He wasn't himself going forward into the Sweet 16 once he found out about her condition. How could you be as a young kid? So, you know, it was a tough situation for us to have to beat them on the West Coast. And we weren't up to the challenge on that day. And that's what I think has been fueling the fire around here with our team is we've got to be up to the challenge when the moment arises, because you're not going to make a run. You know, and it gets harder as you go. And last year, North Carolina was a team that was able to rise to the occasion six times in March, and that's why they went home with the trophy.
Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Cincinnati, again, expected to be one of the top teams in the country, seven straight NCAA tournaments. You know, Mick, obviously the compass is going to point towards a transfer at point guard for your team this year in Kane Broome from Sacred Heart. Another transfer had a big role last year in Kyle Washington. I'm curious, you know, there was a lot of talk about the potential for transfers not to have to sit a year moving forward in college basketball. How much, though, considering there's a chance you're going to have two transfers start for you, do you want to remind people that the redshirt year is a major blessing, and you probably saw that with two of the guys who are going to comprise your starting lineup?
Well, I would go, you know, my argument would be on the side of I think we lose sight of the fact that we're giving away out of state $40,000 to $45,000 scholarships per year. Some people may laugh at that, but I can tell you who's not laughing at that. Every parent that's ever written a check for their kid to go to college, they're not laughing at that. So when a guy transfers, they're gradual, and he sits out a year, his chances of graduating, the graduation rate of a transfer that now has to sit out, so now he's going to use 5 years to play four. The odds of him graduating go to about 100%, because he has the extra year, the extra time. He may lose a few credits in the transfer, depending on what majors and what school that the transfer is dealing with. And again, I think when the talking heads get on television, they're only thinking about basketball, and they talk in terms of penalty, for as if sitting out a year is a penalty, when for years freshmen couldn't play because we didn't deem that they were academically ready or socially ready. And the NBA clearly doesn't want guys coming in out of high school. So I think it common sense tells you that the older you get, the more mature you're going to get. And statistics tell you if you go 5 years, you're going to graduate with a four-year degree at a much higher percentage than if you try to transfer and graduate within a four-year window with a transfer. Forget athletics and all the requirements that go on with athletics and the commitment level it takes from a Division I athlete. Let's just look at the academics of transferring and the credits you're going to lose and the change of majors. And all these kids, and I don't even care if they play professional basketball, they want their degree. Kenyon Martin graduated because he wanted to be able to tell his children as the first pick in a draft, I still got my degree. You need to get your degree. And these guys, and very few guys are going to be the first pick. Very few guys are going to be millionaires. We're talking about all of college basketball, which 99% of these guys are going to need to earn a living. So why wouldn't we do what's going to make sure and ensure anything we can do to ensure that these guys graduate? So that's how I look at it. You know, I don't look at it as a penalty. I look at it as a gift that a guy transfers. He gets to sit out a year, develop, get older, get stronger, focus in on his academics, and make sure that he's set up to graduate. It just makes too much sense to me. I think somewhere along the line, this got talked about for some reason as a penalty. And I don't see it that way. As a parent, I don't see it that way. And as a basketball coach, it's done nothing else my entire adult life. That I'm the guy. See, John, I'm the guy as a head coach at Cincinnati for 12 years that gets the phone call when a kid needs a job, when a kid has a problem, and he's 27 and he's not playing pro anymore. Like, so people on the outside, forget about these guys in the NBA. Forget about guys trying to go pro. Let's think about guys when they're retired, 33 years old and on, and who they are as a person. You know, I'm the one, whether it's myself or my predecessor here, or guy, we're the ones that get the phone calls where guys need help. They need a job. They need direction. They need this. They need a degree. It's hard to help a guy without a degree. So if we can ensure a guy graduates because he sat out a year, I don't know why we wouldn't do it.
And one of the guys, obviously, that is going to go through a redshirt year that's going to play a key role for Cincinnati is Kane Broome. When have you had, not just as the head coach of Cincinnati, but in your coaching career, a guy that had this type of burst to be able to get into the paint?
Well, I haven't. You know, it's funny. I had it at Murray State. I had a guy named Keith Jennifer, Justin Jennifer's cousin, from Baltimore. And he played at Virginia, transferred, and played for me at Murray State, and graduated because he transferred. It gave him the extra year. And Keith Jennifer was unbelievably elusive. Now, he didn't shoot the ball as well as Kane Broome shoots the ball. But it's been a long time for me, John, since we've had somebody with the quickness and the elusiveness that Kane has. And Justin Jennifer is going to play a lot, too, for us, and he's a speed guy as well. So our style of play will be much different offensively this year with probably more pick and roll than we ran for Troy Copain and much faster up and down style because we have a quicker point guard. But I definitely, I've had scoring point guards at Cincinnati. Kazmir Wright was a shooter. Deontay Vaughn's the third leading scorer all time here at Cincinnati. He was a scorer at the point guard position. But nobody is elusive as a guy like Kane Broome.
You know, it's funny, though, Mick, because watching your team last week in practice in Cincinnati and watching Kane's speed in the open floor and the options he has on the wings in Jacob Evans and Jaron Cumberland, which you've already touched on, Cincinnati has always been viewed, and for good reason, as a defensive program. But this year, because of the ability to get extra possessions, could Cincinnati be a potent offensive team?
Sure hope so. I mean, we got the potential, I think, John. We definitely got the potential. You know, my job is to put these guys in the mindset of, shoot, we got to play together and we got to stay on the attack. You know, it all comes down to the ball going in the basket. You're not potent unless the ball goes in the basket. And any great coach will tell you that shooting percentage starts with passing. because you got to find the open man. But the other thing is creation. You know, you got to create somebody being open, and it comes down to the guys that can beat their man. And you alluded to Kane Broome. I threw in Justin Jennifer. You know, Jacob Evans is a guy for us that can create shots for other people, not just himself, because of his ball skill. And then you throw in the fact that Gary Clark and Kyle Washington are really tough to defend in a one-on-one situation. So, again, they create help when we can get them the ball in certain spots on the floor where it's tough to defend them one-on-one. So then it comes down to making sure we're passing the ball to the open man and creating that help and sharing the basketball. I mean, the great teams understand that the open man's the go-to man. But I think, to your point, we shoot the ball well enough, and we have enough finishers on this team to get that to be potent, to get the ball in the basket when the time comes. Because that's what you got to do, because you're going to play if you're going to make a run. Because, you know, like you talked about last year, we ran into a team that was on fire in the second half and had one of the best point guards you'll ever coach against, Alonzo Ball. You got to be able to match a team like that, because you can't shut them down for 40 minutes if you run into a team that's that great offensively and they're playing well. Now, if they're not making shots, they're not playing well, it's a different story. But if you're going to advance and you're going to be potent, you got to be able to do it on the biggest stage. So hopefully we can develop into that team because we're still going to play defense and rebound. And that's one thing that's not going to change around here.
Well, Mick, a big part of your offensive ceiling is going to come down to the step that Jaron Cumberland takes as a sophomore. He showed major flashes last year, and I know from some of the things I wrote or said a couple years ago that no player, maybe no player that you've ever coached, and you know, maybe nobody other than your daughter will you or your father or anybody in your family will be closer to you in terms of you defending them than Sean Kilpatrick was. But I'm curious, how does Jaron Cumberland entering his sophomore year compare to where Sean Kilpatrick was entering his sophomore year?
Well, I will tell you that Sean was older because he went to prep school, and then he redshirted, where Jaron's younger, but here's where they're similar. They got tremendous confidence, and that's a great thing, because on the big stage, you don't want a guy shooting the ball that's afraid to miss. You've got to have a guy that believes in himself when it comes to scoring the basketball. I mean, you've got to have a guy that really believes, hey, this guy can't, you know, he's not worried if he misses. He's just thinking about putting the ball in the basket. And he's not even considering the consequences of a missed shot. He's just on the attack, and he's got tremendous belief in his abilities to score the ball or get himself to the free throw line. And SK was gifted, you know, that was a big part of his gift, you know, his confidence level and his belief in himself. And I think Jaron has that. And it's just, he's just a little bit younger at this time in this stage because he, you know, because like I said about SK being in prep school in a red shirt. But I think if you were to ask me about any reservations I have about this year's team, you know, Jaron Cumberland's not one of them. I think he's going to have a tremendous year for a sophomore.
What are the reservations that you have about this year's team?
Just unknowns, you know, as far as, you know, as a coach, you never know about chemistry, John. You know, chemistry is it's a living thing, and it changes constantly. You know, see, everybody's got great chemistry. It's October. There's no stat sheet, and there's no playing time. Everybody's playing. It's practice. And there are no fans. There's no comments on social media. Nobody's calling your players right now, texting your players, asking them why they're not playing more, why they didn't shoot the ball more, why did the coach take you out of the game. No, so everybody's got great chemistry right now. The question as you go into December, and then November happens, and now as you get into December, okay, now how's your chemistry? You know, now Gary Clark and Kyle Washington and your senior leadership are extremely important because they're the ones telling your young guys, hey, block out noise. You focus on listening and getting better. You keep your mind on being a basketball player and learning and get better every day. Your time comes. You just got to keep working. So, you know, those are the challenges that we all go through in our sport because we're not football. We don't have linemen You know, we have all wide receivers, you know, basketball, everybody, you know, everybody wants touches, everybody wants points. It's just part of it. And as a coach, you got to kind of, you got to navigate through all that. And you know, it's part of dealing with it and making sure your players are, they understand that the basketball is a team game and you're going to be, have ups and downs, big, you're going to have some big games, some not. So that'll determine some things. And that's a living thing that, you know, as a coach, you got to keep a pulse on that at all times. Cause it can ruin a team. No doubt about it. Then I'd say no Troy Copain. You know, you got a guy that doesn't turn the ball over, almost never turn the ball over, especially late game situations. So we have players that have the talent that'll be able to do it, but they haven't had that ball with the game on the line yet, like Troy Copain did. So until we go through that and guys get some experience, that would be the second part of, you know, something that we have to develop with this team.
You know, Mick, you told me last week that you think that the American Conference will get four teams in the NCAA tournament next spring at a minimum, and five is a real possibility. I'm curious, how does the feeling you have with the American Conference now with the addition of Wichita State compare to the feeling you had with the old Conference USA before the Big East added Louisville, DePaul, Marquette, and Cincinnati in 2005-2006?
Well, it's tough. You know, I'm thinking back because I left, you know, I left in 01 for Murray State, didn't come back till we were in the Big East. But, you know, I lived in that, old, you know, in the 90s with Coach Huggins and through the Conference USA years. I can tell you, you know, I've gone back, John, and you could go back and you can look at some teams that we had here. In 97, we were a 2 seed. I think it's just different. You know, seeding is different. The power conference stuff, whether it's legitimate or not, is a mindset thing that's certainly real if you look at NCAA seeding as of late. You know, I think respect for your program is big. You know, I think some Cincinnati teams got some good seeds where I was an assistant, and it might have had a lot to do with early in the first 6 years of the 90s, Cincinnati went to a Final Four and two Elite Eights. So the mindset of the committee member, the respect level may be a little different. So there's so many living factors with that. But you never know. But the Wichita State addition, you add a team that's preseason top 10, it legitimizes your conference. It makes you know, people right away legitimizes it. And because it's a known, they're a team that 5 years ago was in a Final Four. So I think it does nothing but help all of our causes in our league, other than the times you got to play them. But when you play them, it's only going to make you better. You know, it's going to challenge you, and it's going to make you a better basketball team. And I'm going to have to remind myself of that if they whack us this year, because you know they're really, really good. And Coach Marshall's a great coach.
Well, and the goal, obviously, to get better is to put yourself in a position where you can get back to the second weekend of the tournament like you did in 2012. 7 straight appearances in the NCAA tournament, but what do you think maybe that 2012 team that got to the second weekend had that the other 6 didn't?
Well, that team, you talk about scoring, that team could really score if you go look at the numbers. We didn't shoot a high percentage, but we played a 4-guard offense that never turned the ball over, so we got more shots off than our opponent. And it's funny because everybody thinks they know everything about your program. They just read headlines. You know, that team was an average defensive team. We didn't even out rebound our opponents. And so we weren't, you know, all this, the narrative about Cincinnati, that team, 4 guards and spread the floor around Yancey Gates. And as you know, Jaquan Parker is on my staff now, has played point guard 1 year and was playing power point guard the next year as our 4-man. So they could score the ball. So it's just different. I think, you know, we obviously had a pro on that team, Sean Kilpatrick. Luck of the draw, matchups, you know, tournament runs. You never know. Where you play is a big factor. Health. There's a lot of great, great teams that didn't advance in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I get it that's what it's all about. But, I mean, look at Mark Few. And I mean, is he now a great coach because he went to a Final Four? He's been a great coach for, I don't know, 15 years. Just so happened this year he was able to to get to a Final Four. Now, West Virginia, as you know, John, could have very easily beaten Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. Not even the Elite Eight, in the Sweet 16. They're down one with the ball as the clock is ticking down with 20 seconds to go. So if West Virginia scores, is Mark Few not a great coach? I mean, so we all want to make that run, but, you know, these are one-game shots. It's not the pros. There's no 5-7-game series. So you just got to hope you put yourself in that position to get lucky. But I know we're not going to give up. We're not going to stop trying here.
What are the biggest keys for this team to get back in that same position that the one 5.5 years ago had when it was playing Ohio State and had a lead in the second half in the Sweet 16?
You got to get healthy. I think, and like the stuff I talked about earlier, John, is real. You know, I don't know how much people like, you know, they don't like coaches talking about things that aren't tangible, but intangibles are huge. You know, that particular year we had the fight game where we had Yancey Gates and Sheck Mudge got suspended 6 games. That team went through a lot. You know, you can't even describe what that team went through emotionally, and the things that we had to do as far as coming together and making sure people knew that we had good kids and we were all about the right things, and soul searching, you know, and me trying to caretake to make sure those guys knew, hey, I'm gonna make sure everybody knows you guys are good guys. You know, our year's not gonna go to waste. And we rallied, you know, we rallied through an adverse situation, which I would tell you was the springboard for that team. And the guys became much closer through that experience. And I think it helped them immensely. You know, you allude to the Sweet 16. I would tell you it was maybe more impressive that we beat Georgetown and Syracuse in the Big East tournament. A ranked Georgetown team, a number one in the country Syracuse team that was 30-1. To get to the Big East tournament final, where we lost a tight one to Louisville, who I think made the Final Four. So that team was, I think. So you got to get through adversity, and you got to go through some things. You got to come out the other side, and the guys in the locker room are going to determine that. And you got to stay healthy. So we'll see.
And that was the only team, your team that year, that beat Syracuse with a healthy Fab Mello. May he rest in peace. But that was a Syracuse team that if he didn't get suspended that year in the tournament, a lot of people thought they were going to beat Kentucky.
Right. And we, you know, not only did we beat them in the Garden with 17,000 Syracuse fans. So it was a, you know, that. But again, you know, that team, I can't describe the closeness of that group. And it was because of what they went through. Now, I've scheduled a very tough preseason, non-conference, so to speak, schedule, whatever you want to call it, pre-conference, where we're going to face some adversity at Xavier, at UCLA, Florida on a neutral floor. So, you know, these types of games, amongst others, that are going to put us in some tough situations. And, you know, through that, You've got to come together as a group, win, lose, or draw. That's before you even get to conference play, where you're going to be in a lot of tough situations, especially on the road. So, and in our team, as you know, we're going to be in tough situation all year because we're not playing on campus this year. We're playing off campus at BB&T Arena in Northern Kentucky. So that's another dynamic that I'm hoping is going to force us to be closer together and get our underdog mentality. That you alluded to, I think that's it's an advantage to your team because the underdog mentality, all it does is the connotation is you're hungry because you're the underdog, and so you've got to stay hungry as a group. And anything that does that to your team and keeps your team in that mindset is going to help them grow.
Well, Mick, appreciate a couple minutes. It was great being out on campus last week. Always excited to cover your team, but especially excited to cover this one based on what I saw. Stay healthy, and I'll be in touch with you along the way.
You got it, my friend. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to thank Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. Once again, we are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And Audible makes getting more books in your life easy. What's not to love about that? They have an absolutely unbeatable selection of audiobooks, all with fantastic performances. You can easily transform your long commute and ride with Audible. Right now, you can start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. You have to go to audible.com/hoops. Audible has an outstanding collection of exclusive originals, short stories, and comedy, plus the best of news, podcasts, and more, handpicked and continuously refreshed. Be sure to check out audible.com/hoops to start your 30-day trial and get your first audiobook free. Time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them. I'm at John Rothstein. I'm John, J-O-N. And our first question comes from Ernie Morris. And it's, John, how will West Virginia cope with the loss of Brandon Knapper and Issa Ahmad for part of the season? You know, it's interesting, Ernie, that you bring this up. I wrote in my column on Monday about West Virginia's depth now being a major point of concern because Issa Ahmad, the Mountaineers' starting small forward, will not play until mid-January at Texas Tech. He is out 17 games for a violation of university policy. And Brandon Knapper, who I know the West Virginia staff was counting on to be a key backup behind Javon Carter and Daxter Miles, may not play this year due to a knee injury. So for a team that relies on a pressing style to win and rotating players in and out, the quality of West Virginia's depth, in my opinion, is officially in question. West Virginia, Texas A&M open up the season in Germany on November the 10th. Our next question comes from Brett Stein, and it's, lots of love for Wichita State to win the conference, but can't the argument also be made that Cincinnati has just as much returning talent? Look, I think that's a great point, Brett. Wichita State obviously getting a lot of buzz coming into this season in the American. The big difference, though, Wichita State returned its entire team. Cincinnati lost two of its top six players from last year, Troy Copain and Kevin Johnson. But I can tell you, after watching Cincinnati last week, the Bearcats are not going to miss a beat. I think this has a chance to be pound for pound, inch for inch, the best team that Mick Cronin has had at his alma mater. Our next question comes from Matt St. Jean, and it's, John, what's the ceiling for Providence this year? To me, Providence is an NCAA tournament team. I think Ed Cooley has got a real sleeper in freshman big man Nate Watson. Also, I think Makai Ashton Lankford, the former UConn signee, should really help them at guard. But I think right now, when you look at the Big East, you're looking at tiers. I see Villanova, Xavier, Seton Hall a tier above Providence, which would be in the second tier. Now that we've concluded our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, it's time for some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, the hidden backcourt, the best potential backcourt in college basketball that nobody's talking about. How about SMU, Jimmy Witt, the Arkansas transfer, Shake Milton, Jarae Foster, and also Jamal McMurray, the former South Florida guard who will be eligible in December, gives Tim Jankovic four lethal guards. Nugget number two, Issa's absence. We were just talking about this. Issa Ahmad, a guy who averaged 11-4 last year for West Virginia, the starting small forward for the Mountaineers, will not play until January 13th at Texas Tech, according to a school spokesman. That is a big storyline in the Big 12. It'll be interesting to see how the Mountaineers do depth-wise without Ahmad and also Brandon Knapper. Nugget number three, a Williams revival. Kenny Williams from North Carolina has been fully cleared for all basketball activities, but will have his reps monitored, a school spokesman told me last week. Remember, Kenny Williams is a big piece for North Carolina, especially if the Tar Heels want to play smaller. From what I'm hearing out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina's best players, all perimeter guys, with the exception of Luke May, the one freshman that seems to be ahead of the curve in Chapel Hill when you talk about their freshman bigs, is Garrison Brooks. Nugget number four, leftover Knowles. Florida State, after last season, lost Dwayne Bacon, Jonathan Isaac and Xavien Retan-Mays. But what about what it returns? Four top 70 guys, Trent Forrest, C.J. Walker, freshman M.J. Walker, and Terrence Mann return on the perimeter. The cupboard is not bare in Tallahassee. And nugget number five, I am on the road again this week. I'll be at Seton Hall, DePaul, Northwestern, Notre Dame, Illinois, and St. Louis as we continue to count down to the start of the 2017-18 college basketball season. We'd like to thank Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.